CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I go to Moscow to Felix Leiter of CBS News and the Moscow Times, reporting on the upcoming elections in the Duma, very critical to Russia here in 2021. But momentarily, we go to 2001, 9/11/2001, and Felix, his memories of that day. Felix, a very good day to you in Moscow. Where were you, and how did you learn of the attack on New York and Washington? Good day.
Good day, John. It's great to be here. Well, of course, I was a schoolboy of eight in rural southwest England at the time of 9/11. But I do vividly remember it. You know, it's one of these kind of early memories, these handful of memories that I can sort of positively date. You know, we found out when we came home after school, and it sort of, you know, it wiped off all the sort of, you know, day-to-day concerns that you have when you're an eight-year-old, you know, about whatever toys or things you want to, your mother to buy or whatever. Because, you know, my godfather lived and indeed lives in Bergen County, New Jersey, right next to New York City. So my family and my parents were quite keen to establish that he had sort of not been killed. So I remember these days after it, sort of after the event, being sort of filled with this kind of, you know, this really sort of frantic worry. And I think it certainly touched a great deal of people in the UK. You know, it was naturally, it wiped everything else off the headlines. And I think certainly British nationals were sort of, if not the second most numerous group among victims, then certainly among the top few groups. So I think there were a lot of human stories that were playing out in England and in Britain at the time.
Do you remember watching the television and seeing the pictures of the towers? You might have seen it at any point in these last years. I'm wondering if that first day is a vivid memory.
I think I must have, but I can't say that it was that I remember it sort of vividly. I remember being more sort of, I remember being very conscious that something had been lost. You know, I'd never been to New York at the time. I'd never seen the Twin Towers, but, you know, my cousin had the summer before, and I remember sort of sitting in the car home and thinking that I couldn't believe that something so big and something so famous was just gone. You know, I didn't really have a visual impression, but I had a very visceral, emotional one, I think.
We come to 2021, and Felix is in Moscow to cover the Duma elections upcoming momentarily. The Duma elections are critical to governance of Russia because it's a vast country, 10 or 11 time zones, and city-states within those time zones. What are the issues in the Duma elections, and how are they going to be conducted this time in the time of the pandemic?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, obviously, Russia is not a democracy, but it does have some sort of democratic elements. You know, it formally is a democracy according to its constitution. It operates in practice as an authoritarian state, which is a little bit of a factor when we think about elections. But elections do happen, and, you know, they are contested. A certain range of opposition parties are allowed to contest them. And I think what we have seen so far is that the Kremlin was hoping for an election that would be about sort of, you know, national security, foreign policy and geopolitics. You'll see if you, you know, on the two leading candidates nationwide of the Kremlin's United Russia Party are Defense Minister Shoigu and Foreign Minister Lavrov, who are two of the most sort of respected figures in Russian politics, apart from Vladimir Putin himself. And I think by doing that, they were clearly hoping to sort of win the election for United Russia, the Kremlin's political party, as I said. On this platform of sort of opposition to the West, of sort of, you know, worrying about sort of national security and the threat from abroad. In the event, the election has really not been about those issues, because the election in the event has really been about sort of more bread and butter socioeconomic issues of things like falling incomes, inflation, price rises, which are hugely sort of hitting home in Russia at the moment. And what we've seen actually is a sort of a slight increase in the polling share, at least of the Communist Party, which is a sort of the largest quote unquote opposition party. It's fairly sort of Putin loyal, but it is allowed to contest elections. And it does win, you know, a substantial number of seats. So I think that we're likely to see a certain sort of credible performance for them. It will be watered down, of course, because this is Russia, and there will be a degree, although not an absolute degree, it will be sort of a relative factor of sort of falsification, of voter fraud, of, you know, vote rigging in the interests of United Russia, in the interests of the Kremlin. So, you know, you have to sort of take all the election results with a fairly large pinch of salt.
How is the election to be conducted? Because I read in the Moscow Times they're going to try online. What does that look like?
Yeah, so there's a big sort of push towards online voting, and you know, this has been sort of the object of quite some scandal from the side of the sort of the opposition, from, as I mentioned, the Communist Party, from the remnants of the Navalny movement, because there's a general feeling that online voting, which is not especially transparent, you know, you can't send an election observer to really monitor an online count, will in fact be used as a means by which the election can be rigged, and which by you know, United Russia vote totals can be increased. You know, we at the Moscow Times had a piece today about workers in the sort of the state sector, government workers, teachers, doctors, transport workers, being told by their managers that they had to register for online voting as part of their job. And it's, you know, it's not too big an assumption to make that perhaps they will be forced as well to vote for the ruling party. So I think certainly there's a lot of scandal about these sort of online technological democratic innovations right now.
So it is e-voting. Is this the first time that's been tried nationwide, Felix, or is this an old hat to the Russian voters?
Well, it's actually not being tried nationwide this time. It's limited to about 10% of regions, but crucially, Moscow is one of them. And Moscow is by far the most sort of opposition, kind of anti-Kremlin leaning region in Russia. So it seems at least possible that the impact of online voting, of e-voting, will be to sort of, shall we say, sort of apply some balm to United Russia's electoral wound in Moscow, to maybe artificially inflate those totals a little bit.
All right. Issues. Certainly the pandemic, certainly the vaccine, but climate change. Moscow Times has a wonderful report from a veteran icebreaker captain that in the North Pole he sees clear changes about him. And this seems exciting because opening up the North is extremely promising to Russia. Do I read that correctly, Felix? This is a positive.
I think it has been seen as a positive, certainly, and it is probably still seen as a positive. You know, this northern passage, easier trade routes sort of from European Russia, probably over to the Far East, to China, but also to some extent, I suppose, also to North America. I would say that perhaps, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, the Russian sort of official statements sort of on climate change were really into sort of playing up the positives, you know, the Northern Passage, more agricultural land in Siberia. I would say more recently, this is a sort of, you know, the idea of climate change having positives for Russia has actually been played down a little bit. We've certainly seen this last year, you know, Russia in this summer even has been really sort of under siege by a series of sort of natural catastrophes, you know, the wildfires in Yakutia, which you and I, John, have talked about a lot. We've seen flooding along the Black Sea. So I think this idea of positives has maybe sort of been reduced a little bit in the thinking of the Kremlin, though it probably still is there.
And also the virus, we must check in. I read in Moscow Times, 7 million cases, 7 million plus cases. Is it seen as going to an ebb or a flow? Is it seen as rising or sinking right now in Moscow?
Well, one has to remember that, like many sort of statistical measures in Russia, virus statistics have to be taken with a pinch of salt. And certainly we've seen pretty explicit signs that, for now, the virus issue is being played down, so that the state can sort of get the Duma elections out of the way. And then we may have a return to some kind of, like, you know, restrictions, sanitary restrictions on the population. I think certainly, the Russian government is very wary of imposing any sort of vaccine mandates or sort of even, you know, social distancing requirements so close to the election, simply because they're very unpopular. And the election is set to be very low turnout. You know, we're talking 40-45% perhaps. And so they're very cautious of any sort of unpopular issue that could galvanize voters who have a sort of a grudge against the government but can't be bothered to go to the polls. And I think that sort of any, you know, sanitary restrictions, any new anti-coronavirus measures will be delayed until safely after polls are closed in 2 weeks' time.
And finally, reenactors of Borodino, 1812. This looks like a super spreader event, but wonderfully colorful. Is this an annual affair? We have 30 seconds, Felix.
It is, and I'm a big fan because the dacha, the summer house that I spend a lot of time at with my girlfriend, is literally on the Borodino battlefield. So we get a lovely display every summer.
The photographs show that they take this extremely seriously. Those are beautiful costumes they're wearing.
It's an impressive display, you know. It's an extraordinary event.
And beautiful horses as well. The Battle of Borodino still celebrated, along with Tchaikovsky, in Moscow. Felix Leit of CBS News and of the Moscow Times. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.